bug shucking oysters while shushing shuffleboard shunners. This is Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. Today's show is 206, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your video conferencers vitalized by video games, viticulture, and vitamins.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Okay, to start the show, I actually have a fun fact, and I'm curious whether if you guys know. So here's my question. How many tentacles does an octopus have?
Well, this sounds like a trick question.
Yeah, because you would think eight.
Technically, you're supposed to be say eight. Yeah.
I'm going to guess it's like six. It's like two of them are like, there are forearms or something like that. I don't know.
Four forearms? That's funny. Zero. Because octopus have arms. Arms and tentacles are two different types of appendages.
Huh.
An arm has suction cups all along the limb.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then a tentacle has suction cups near the end of the limb.
Oh, okay.
So like a squid has tentacles, and then an octopus that is like all the cups everywhere, their arms.
I remember there was this ad fail, like international ad fail about octopuses. And it was like a deodorant company was like, oh, look, you know, the octopus is putting deodorant under all its arms. But in Japan, I think they're called legs. And so it was like deodorant under your legs.
Right. Well, yeah. You can. There's just no reason to. And it would probably
it just
have
looks
really
real
bad
weird.
Side effects. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep all the parts fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's smelling there?
All right. Well, without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. Here, I've selected a random Trivial Pursuit card. Ooh, I better not show that to the camera because those are the answers. And you guys have your barnyard buzzers ready. Listeners, play along. Here we go. Blue Wedge for geography. What is the national dish of Scotland? That was Chris.
Haggis.
Yeah, that's
correct.
I guess haggis. That's it.
Here, the card says a mix of sheep innards. Oh, I thought it said cats. It's oats. Well, my eyes were swimming for a minute. I was like, sheep innards and cats. I was like, oh, okay. Sheep innards, oats, and spices shoved into sheep stomach like a crazy hot dog. That literally is what the card
says. Is that what it says on the card?
Yeah, a crazy hot dog.
Huh. I mean, what do they think's in a normal hot dog? Feels like not so far away from.
I keep thinking that organs will taste better as I get older.
Mm.
And it just doesn't. When I was a kid, I'm like, oh yeah, this stuff is like adult stuff. I'll learn to like it when I'm an adult. Can't do it.
I mean, they do say that your taste buds lose sensitivity as you get older. So maybe there's hope yet.
All right. Pink Wedge for pop culture. For which cartoon character was Mel Blanc doing the voiceover while routinely spitting out carrot bites? Colin.
Bugs Bunny.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Says here, a spittoon was a permanent fixture in Mel's studio. Yellow Wedge. Which toy's packaging once boasted, throw it indoors. You can't damage lamps or break windows. You can't hurt babies or old people. Dana. Oh.
Is it Nerf?
It is Nerf. Yeah. It says Nerf ball.
What was the last one? You can't hurt babies or old people?
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
It feels like
right.
A challenge, yeah. Doesn't it?
It's exactly. Like, is this a, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Purple Wedge. Who is the author of A Tale of Children Deeply Down on Their Luck, aptly named A Series of Unfortunate Events? That was Chris.
Lemony Snicket.
AKA, correct.
I believe mm-hmm. Daniel Handler is the guy's real name.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes.
You
He's
guys
from San Francisco.
All knew this?
Yeah.
Oh. Green Wedge. Which name was chosen by popular vote for Britain's newly constructed polar research vessel in 2016?
It's Bodie McBoatface.
Yeah.
And they renamed it.
Good.
They didn't.
You know,
really? Are you anti-Bodie McBoatface?
I'm anti-ballot box stuffing for internet. It seems against the spirit to me. Yeah, I am. I'm an old man.
We would not know the name at all or that it exists if they didn't do that.
That's true.
It's marketing. It was a marketing thing and it worked.
It's true.
Do you know what it got changed to?
Oh, no.
Sir Bodie McBoatface.
I really thought you had me there. Sir David Attenborough.
Oh, okay. That's a good one.
You know what I don't like about it is that now every time there's anything that's internet crowdsourced, they have to like weed out the blanky McBlank submissions. Face. Like it's, yeah, because...
Colin, you're going to have to add opinions my own to your Twitter bio.
Retweets are not endorsed. Okay.
Karen, you're my manager at Good Job Brain, so you're going to be getting some complaints.
Well, the number one complaint is you can't say basketball. You can't pronounce basketball correctly. Bastetball.
I'll just say hoops.
Yeah,
hoops.
Real street.
With a Z.
All right, last question. Last wedge, orange wedge. In the Tour de France, which jersey does the writer dubbed King of the Mountains wear?
Oh.
So we know yellow is...
Oh man, there's half a dozen of these. Yeah.
Yeah, they have like a white one.
Does it oh okay. Sorry.
Ooh.
Is it gold?
No.
Okay.
Does it say which or what color?
It says which jersey does the writer dubbed King of the Mountains wear? That's a good clarification. That's a good
question. Okay, that actually clues me. I feel a lot more confident. Is it the polka dotted one? Is it like polka dot? Yeah.
Really?
They have a lot of cool little sub, you know, they're like side quests when you're doing the overall tour. It's like they have like time trials and they've best climber. And so like you can do these little, you know, sort of mini achievements. And that's one of them. Yeah, King of the Mountains.
Superlatives.
Yeah.
This is why you have a sports guy in your trivia team every day.
I'm like, oh, I gotta start looking at the Tour de France stuff.
Yeah. No, you don't, Nana. Just as long as Colin's here, you don't have to think about that.
It's that bus principle. If he gets hit by a bus, our biggest concern is who's going to cover the Tour de France.
Yeah, I know.
No.
All right. Good job, everybody. So today's episode, we're talking about international stuff. We're talking about other countries, other languages. We're venturing out of our country. This week, we're going global.
That's the airplane taking off. That's what that sound like.
Sorry. I get it.
No, I was going, yeah. Yeah, it's always a good sign when a good sound effect, when you have to explain the sound effect afterward. That means you've really nailed it.
Okay, so we love our geography here at Good Job Brain. Comes up in trivia a lot. And I started thinking about, well, what would be a fun geography-related quiz. I decided that we are going to do a quiz on some of the countries that maybe don't get talked about so much. Yes, that's right. The top 10 tiniest countries the world.
Nice.
It is going to be 10 questions. Okay. The answer to each question is going to be the name of the tiny country. Some of these are going to be easier than others. First, I'm going to start out so I don't get a maxual lead here. What is a country? The definition of this. It is a sovereign entity with its own government and a defined land area. So don't give me, this is a city state, that's a micro state, this is that. It is sovereign, it runs its own affairs, it has its own government, and it's got a defined land area. That is what we're calling a country.
Well, tiny's back, tiny houses, tiny living, tiny's making a comeback.
Oh, and importantly, the size of the country is measured in land area, not population, just to be clear.
Okay.
So once we come out of this, we will have discussed the 10 smallest countries in the world. Okay, here we go. Question one.
Are we buzzing in?
Yes, it's a buzz-in quiz. Get your barnyard buzzers ready. Thank you for keeping me honest on that one, Dana. Question one. At just 0.49 square kilometers in area, what is the smallest country in the world? Karen?
Vatican City.
Vatican City. Oh, okay, Vatican City. Population 825.
It says city in the name.
It says city in the name. Yeah, it's a city state. It's a city state. It's which is sort of roughly defined as like one city that runs it, that runs its own affairs.
Got it.
Yes, it is a, by definition of this quiz, it's a country. It's a sovereign entity. It has its own government. Has a defined land area stuck right in the middle of Rome. Question number two. You can see this tiny country in the James Bond films Never Say Never Again and GoldenEye.
Ooh.
Colin?
Is that Monaco?
It's Monaco.
Oh.
Monaco. Monaco is the smallest country with a coastline. At about 2 square kilometers, it is approximately the size of Central Park.
No way.
Yep.
That's where, like, that's like all the gambling stuff.
It has the Monte Carlo Casino. Yes. Famously in the James Bond movies. Illegal for the actual residents, citizens of Monaco to go to that casino and to gamble. Yeah, so it's
really?
Totally, yep, they can't do it. Tourism only. Number three, the next smallest country is the smallest island nation in the world, as well as the least visited nation in the world.
Hmm.
It is 5 letters. Oh, okay. Colin.
Is that Niue?
You are zeroing in on it, but I can't give you credit. It is 5 letters long and it starts with an N. Karen. Mm.
Well, maybe he's pronouncing it the right way. Is it? I think it's from Survivor. Nauru.
Oh
Nauru.
Yeah. That's
it.
Karen's got it.
Question four. The fourth smallest country gets about 12% of its gross national income from licensing the rights to use its universally popular top-level internet domain. Dana.
Tuvalu,
which fortuitously got the top-level internet domain .tv, which everybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
Number five, the fifth smallest country in the world is one of the world's richest, ranking 9th in GDP per capita. Like Vatican City, it is also landlocked within Italy.
Huh, I didn't know there's so many landlocked. I thought there were two. I thought it was like Vatican City and Lesotho in South Africa.
In fact, there are three, and this is the other one.
Oh, interesting. Country within a country.
Yeah, is it...
Dana.
Does it begin with an M?
Sort of. It's a saint. It's a saint.
San Marino.
Somebody. San Marino. Oh. Yeah, San Marino. There you go. San Marino. Yeah, they rich.
Why are they so rich?
I don't know, man.
Rich people just move there.
Ask them. Yeah. 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 Just always done very well for themselves.
Okay.
Good for them.
You sound like you're their aunt at like a family gathering. You know who's done really well for themselves is San Marino.
Why can't you be more like your cousin, San Marino? Number six. This tiny European country shares its name in pronunciation but not exact spelling with a famous American pop artist. Colin.
That's a good clue. It's Liechtenstein.
Liechtenstein, the country.
Oh, Liechtenstein. The dots, the comic pop.
That's
dots.
The guy. Roy Liechtenstein. Yeah. Yep.
You said it's not pop artist, and I was like, pink? And then
it was like, oh, no, yeah.
Not a country.
Yeah, the country, Lady Gaga. Question seven, the seventh tiniest country. On March 1st, 1954, the United States detonated its largest nuclear device ever in a test on Bikini Atoll in this country.
Oh, yes.
Where is Bikini
Karen.
Atoll?
Karen.
It's like I've seen the map and I know the flag and it looks like a U, like a weird horseshoe. I think
cool
it's
story,
like,
bro.
is it like... Not San Marino. Is it like Marshall Islands?
Marshall Islands!
Yeah.
That's it. There we go. Question eight.
This is hard.
You're getting them, though.
Yeah, this is good.
You guys are getting them. Question eight. Dun, da, 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 dun, 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 da, da, da. Alexander Hamilton was born on one of the two islands making up this tiny nation, the smallest in the Western Hemisphere. Colin.
That is St. Kitts and Nevis.
St. Kitts and Nevis. Wow, got it right on the nose. Job. There you go.
Yes. This is where going to Alexander Hamilton High School pays off for me. Yes.
Well, there we go.
Yes.
Your Slumdog Millionaire moment.
Yeah, yes. It was. Yep. The honor society was called the Nevians. The no. Nevians.
Wow.
And so the only reason I know is because they had to explain to us what the heck Nevians means. Like, what is Nevians? Like, well, somebody who's a native of Nevis would have been a Nevian, and okay, all right, I get it.
Yeah. Question nine, as we barrel towards the end here. Question nine: the smallest country in Asia. It consists of 1,192 coral islands, and its primary industry is tourism.
Huh.
Yeah.
Smallest country
in
people,
Asia.
People go diving there to look at the coral, as you might imagine. Beautiful underwater.
It's not.
Yeah.
Like-
just a bunch of little Singapore islands. Mm-hmm. Smallest country in Asia.
Yeah, when you started saying smallest, I was thinking, yeah, Singapore.
When I say it, you'll probably know it. Oh, is this, yeah. Is this the one that stumps everybody?
Kiribati, there's like, there's like.
That's not, yeah, what is it? Okay.
I'm going to tell you, it's the Maldives. The Maldives.
Oh. Yeah. I always see like airline ticket deals to there, but I didn't know where it was.
And finally, question 10. A statue of a bird purportedly hailing from this nation was a central plot point in a famous 1941 film. Karen.
Maltese Falcon. Malta.
Yeah.
Malta.
Yeah.
Yes. Malta. Malta, the 10th smallest country in the world. So basically, very good job, everybody. Whenever we do geography sort of stuff, I'm always thinking, okay, when we have a list of something like this, I'm thinking, well, what's the mnemonic that we're going to use to remember this in the future? Now, I'm not saying I spent a whole lot of time on this, and I'm not saying somebody can't come up with something better. Maybe you can. But here's the mnemonic: 10 tiniest countries from tiniest to, you know, moderately largest. And I want you to just think about a native of one of these countries, a person from one of these countries who decides that they want to get out of their tiny country and they want to leave it and they want to, you know, go see the big world. And the mnemonic is vacating my narrow, tiny state, leaving my small, miniature motherland.
Okay, that's very poetic.
Too bad there's a lot of N's.
There's a lot. Vacating my narrow, tiny state, leaving my Vatican small, miniature City. Motherland. Vatican City. Monaco. Nauru. Tuvalu. San Marino.
Marino.
Liechtenstein. Gotta look this one up. Marshall Islands. St. Kitts and Nevis. Maldives. Malta.
Man, a lot of M's.
Nothing I can do about it.
Little very claps. Good
job. I think you got 9 out of 10 for everybody.
Yeah. Little claps for the little countries.
Little claps. Tiny claps. All right, next stop on our tour. We're flying out from tiny countries, and now we're going into Colin.
So sometimes I read a story online that just comes to me, and I immediately know I want to share it with you guys, with the Good Job Brain crew. This is the headline of the article by Andrew Chemmings on SFGate from a couple months ago. The bizarre tale of the world's last lost tourist who thought Maine was San Francisco. And I was like, oh, that's... I mean, I think back to like how we used to travel when I was a kid. My parents would go to the ticket agency and buy paper tickets and come home. I mean, whole different way of traveling, right? So in 1977, a man by the name of Erwin Kreutz in Germany... he was single, no kids, 49 years old, had basically spent his life savings on a trip for his birthday to the USA. He had never taken a trip of this magnitude ever in his life. It was a big deal for him. So he booked his ticket to the West. He wanted to go see the West in San Francisco like he'd seen on TV and, you know, just very romantic notions. So he gets on the plane. The plane comes over. And like a lot of international flights did then and still do, you know, stop and refuel on the East Coast. Okay. His plane stopped in Bangor, Maine to refuel. Passengers, if they wanted to, they could go and clear customs, get off, you know, stretch their legs, get something to eat, get back on the plane, and then continue on to San Francisco and make it easier on the other end. So it also was a shift change for the flight attendants on Irwin's flight.
Oh, no.
So now I should mention at this point that Erwin Kreutz, by his own admission, was a very, very capable drinker. He at one point said, you know, I mean, if he was being truthful, who knows? He said at one point that he could drink 17 beers a day.
Okay.
I should note he worked for a brewery as well. So, okay.
This is very much, I didn't say you couldn't. I said you should.
I said you shouldn't. So Erwin is already in whatever state of mind, very tired. The plane stops. And in what proved to be a very fateful moment, on her way off the plane, a flight attendant said to him, "Have a nice time in San Francisco." So Erwin gets off the plane, gets his bags, goes through customs, exits the airport, gets in a taxi, and in his extremely, extremely limited English says, "Take me to the city." And so the cab says, "Okay, great. You know, takes him, drops him in downtown Bangor." He checks into the hotel. Again, like, imagine just traveling now, just winging it, like the hotel. You're like, I'll figure it out when I get there. Seriously. Yeah. So he goes into town, right? So he checks into the Bangor House Hotel. Walks around town a little bit, you know, maybe starting to feel a little bit like, okay, this doesn't quite look like I imagined, but, you know, his first stop is looking for a bar. So he goes to a bar, gets a drink, goes back out walking around. He's starting to get a little perplexed now, okay, right? Because he's like, you know, he sees a couple Chinese restaurants and he's like, okay, well, I know they have Chinese restaurants in San Francisco, but nothing really looks like the San Francisco that he's seen on TV. So he's thinking, all right, well, maybe I'm in a suburb, right? Okay, so maybe I'm, you know, I got to get like downtown to see all the stuff I've seen. So he hails a cab. Again, you know, in his limited English, he asks the cab driver, "Take me to downtown San Francisco." And the cab driver, thinking he's, you know, just putting him on, just basically drives away and says, you know, "Get lost, pal." So he's like, okay. All right. At this point, he realizes, you know, something's wrong. Something's up. So he goes back to the bar. He tries to just get some help from a waitress at the bar. It's just too much. He cannot get it across. But amazingly, luckily for him, the waitress had a neighbor who was a Czechoslovakian immigrant who spoke some German. They connect the two. So he couldn't speak any English. I mean, really no English. He said he saw some hills and thought, okay, well, maybe I'm close. So
San Francisco's silly.
Yeah, you know, I heard some hills on TV. So the neighbor Gertrude Romein, so she takes him into their home, and word, you know, spreads immediately among sort of the networks there. Eventually the Bangor Daily News. I mean, like, eventually. I mean, like, almost immediately the Bangor Daily News gets wind of this story. Then it gets picked up nationally. Okay, the national news gets wind of this.
Look at this guy who doesn't know where he is.
That's right. This man who's 3,000 miles from where he thought he was going to, you know, just, we want to adopt him and take him in. So again, quoting from this article I read, within days, Kreutz became an honorary member of the Penobscot Indian Nation, had a folk song written about him, was thrown a 50th birthday party, was visited by the governor of Maine.
Oh my God.
And was gifted an acre of scrubland in the northern part of the state. As kind of an act of a goodwill. It's like, here you go. You now are a landowner of Maine. The Bangor Daily News compared him to the town seal who Kreutz kissed for a photo op.
Erwin Kreutz,
the town seal.
You know, the town seal.
That, you know, okay. There's a photo of him with the seal, you know, jumping through a hoop. Yeah.
I can't believe he jumped through a hoop.
Yeah.
I convinced him he was a seal in San Francisco.
I mean, you know.
And he lives there to this day, is the town
yeah,
seal.
Yeah, he's still in that pool, you know, bless his heart. The Bangor Daily News, this is them writing. Erwin Kreutz met Andre the Seal. Andre the Seal Thursday morning. They must have a lot to talk about because they have a great deal in common. Neither speaks a word of English. Each ranks among the great communicators of our time. Both are media events of the first order.
I mean, I felt like that was a mean one.
So the San Francisco Examiner by this point had gotten wind, you know, of this was going on, and there so talk started bubbling up. thought that like maybe they might fly him out to San Francisco proper so he could actually, you know,
we have seals here too.
Yeah, I mean, but they were indulging him, you know. He wanted to see an American jail, so they took him to a jail in
Bangor.
Yeah, exactly. So eventually the San Francisco Examiner did indeed pay to fly him out, extend his trip a little bit, flew out to San Francisco.
He wanted to see a jail. I wonder if he wanted to go to Alcatraz. Like, that's what he was trying to tell them about.
He had just said, I think, an American jail. Like, you know, by the time he got out to San Francisco, they're like, well, we got to one-up Bangor, right? Everything, riding the cable cars. That's right. He wanted to go see, he went to see a rodeo with the Cow Palace.
Wow. You
know, eventually word got back to Germany. And so he got, you know, sort of a second wave of...
He was like a travel influencer before influencers.
truly incredible, truly incredible. So he was, you know, basically due back at work eventually. I mean, like, this is a trip for his birthday. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, he had retired or something, right? So there's a photo of him, you know, back at the airport. Like, the airline made a very comically oversized luggage tag that they hung around his neck, and it says in German and English, it says, "Please let me off in Frankfurt."
Oh my God.
And, you know, so then just the coda, I mean, sort of the double coda. So a year after this all went down, he came back to Bangor for a 2-week trip. Welcome. I mean, open arms. There was like, you know, they had him opening a mall. I mean, it was sort of another big deal. It's like,
yeah, so Erwin
is back again. Yeah. Apparently, it turned out that he had gotten fired from his job back in... back at the Schaller breweries. Yeah. Conflicting stories here. They say it was basically at the peak of Oktoberfest, he was off, you know, jet setting around America. He says they were trying to cash in on his newfound fame for themselves and make money off of him. And he basically asked for a cut of the profits and they, you know, fired him. So who knows? He came back to Bangor one last time in 1979, 2 years later, again, I think trying to cash in. This almost no reaction at this point. And I think he realized like, okay, you know what? I probably should have left it after just the two visits. And so he returned back to his life in Germany and, you know, basically dropped off the scene. In today's world, there's 1,000 different ways that this tragedy, you know, could have been avoided along the way.
Yeah.
It would not have happened. You know, I mean, between heightened security, translation available on your smartphone, just everything going on. I don't think that this kind of story could ever happen again.
The fact that back then people used to like get on the wrong flight, like that is just not in my head right now.
People would make that mistake today, but they just stop you from being able to do that because everything is barcoded, right?
Yeah.
Trackable.
The final little button here on the story. Well into the 1980s, according to the tax collector for the very small town of St. Francis, Maine, well into the 80s, the tax collector would send out the property dues.
Because
he owned this land, this tiny little bit of land, his acre. She would dutifully send out the dues, mail it all the way, and it would come back always. He was paying at least into the 1980s. Oh. Yeah, wow. he was still paying on this little parcel of land so he could, you know, have his little footprint
Cute.
In America.
I thought this was gonna, turns out he owes $1 million. Penalty after penalty.
He's the biggest tax scofflaw in Maine history.
I appreciate him knowing when to wrap it up too.
Yeah.
You're like, well, that was the 15 it. Minutes. Yep.
Yeah.
I get it. Andre the Seal has his own Wikipedia page. Oh, Andre the Seal is the movie Andre the Seal.
What?
That movie with Tina, the cute kid from Karina.
There's a movie
Tina
Majorino. Andre the Seal?
It's called Andre.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Okay. So we laughed at the town seal, but he's more famous
than
us.
He's more famous than me.
Are any of us a town seal?
Wow. All right. Well, we've stopped at Bangor, Maine. And now we're going to jet off to Dana, where we're going.
We're going back to Belgium.
Whoa!
Woo! Classic good job brain segment, Belgium or not Belgium. This is from back in the day when we kickstarted our podcast. We said we'd make an episode about our top contributor, top patron, and that happened to be a person from Belgium. And so I was like, oh, I have to make Belgium trivia. And basically, the quiz is it's a very simple concept. All you have to do is say, is this trivia about Belgium or not about Belgium? And that's it. But it can be quite difficult because it turns out we don't know very much about Belgium.
Very little. Yeah.
Or things. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think things.
Not all of them are related to Belgium, but some of them are. So
the hard part is the psychological torture that we go through. You know, like
Dana gets inside our heads.
Like Belgian waffles. Oh, is that really from Belgium or is it like a marketing ploy? So that kind of weird psychological decision making is hard.
You ready? All right. First one. Hosted a World's Fair. Is this Belgium or not Belgium?
That's gotta be Belgium.
It has to. Well, so it would be Brussels.
It doesn't have to be.
No.
The city would be Brussels, right?
Yeah, that would be my guess.
I don't think I've ever.
What do you think?
I say not Belgium.
I say Belgium.
It is Belgium. They actually hosted several of them.
Like really?
Three of them or something. Yeah. How about won the World Cup for soccer or football? If you're from Belgium.
Ooh,
have they ever won a World Cup?
Sure. Yes.
I say yes.
I say no.
Not Belgium.
Oh,
really?
Never won. Yeah, the best they've done is third at the 2018 tournament. How about originated the word spa?
Oh.
Spa.
Man, you know what? I had the origin of this word on a quiz at one point, and I cannot even be sure anymore. I love it.
I'm going to say no, not Belgium.
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Belgium.
There's
a town in Belgium called Spa.
Mm-hmm.
And they have spas there. Yeah, it came from Belgium. How about, has a famous fountain sculpture of a peeing boy in front of its grand palace? It's like a big cultural landmark.
I saw this in person. Where was it? Oh, no. I don't think.
Have you ever gone to Belgium?
It's Luxembourg.
I'll say no.
No.
Okay. Everybody says not Belgium, but it is Belgium. It's called the Mannequin Piss Sculpture.
Yeah. Yes.
It's in front of the Grand Palace, and it's this. Wikipedia says it's the best known symbol of the people of Brussels because it embodies their sense of humor and independence of mind. How about home to the Avanos Hair Museum, a museum that boasts over 16,000 samples of human hair?
Ooh, the hair museum.
I know this is not Belgium because this is in my basement.
I'm gonna say Belgium.
Not Belgium. This sounds like a Netherlands.
It is not Belgium. It's in Turkey, and it is something to behold. You should look this up.
Hair museum.
Yeah. So the story is that there was a potter who lived in this, who worked from his little shop, and his old friend was leaving, and he asked for something to remember her by, and she gave him a lock of his hair, and he displayed it in his shop, and then like other women left pieces of their hair, and now like the shop is covered in pieces of hair, 16,000 samples of human hair all over the shop.
Those locks on the Paris Bridge,
right? But or you know, like some bars have like dollar bills like pinned in the ceiling or something like that. Yeah,
it's
right. Like that,
but it's just human hair taped to the wall. How about hot chocolate was invented here?
Oh, I feel like this is a Swiss
on purpose or accidentally.
I'm gonna say yes, Belgium.
Sure, why not?
This is a Switzerland.
They're a good chocolate pocket of this country.
Swiss powdered hot chocolate?
Maybe.
All right, no, it's not Belgium. It was the Mayans or maybe even the Olmecs.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And then the Spaniards brought it back to Europe. And there's also like it was on a list of Irish inventions. And I was like, really? Ireland invented it? But it turns out it was an Irish doctor who invented putting milk in hot chocolate to make it taste better.
I invented that when I was 6 years old. I don't know.
Invented adding milk.
That's why I was like, it was the Mayans. I don't think I can give credit.
I invented stirring it with a spoon.
Oh, one day I want to do a story about the hot chocolate houses. Like when hot chocolate became a big thing in Europe, it was really interesting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I look forward to it.
All right. Final one. The World Wide Web. Is that... from Belgium, related to Belgium?
Why would you ask us this? Did someone add milk to?
Yeah. Right, someone like added a CERN colon. Was a big part of the early internet, so I'm gonna say no.
I'm gonna say yes because you're asking us.
I'll say yes. Why not?
Okay.
It's half Belgian. So the two people who are credited with developing the World Wide Web are a British guy and a Belgian guy. And it was related to CERN, actually. You're right, Colin. Yeah.
I told you, Dana gets in my head every time.
Yeah. I play the mind game. Yeah, good job, y'all.
All right. The hot chocolate. Yeah, of course. I mean, you got me. Yeah.
I walked right into my little trap.
Totally.
All right, folks, since we're going global, I'm going to take your senses on a global journey too, but this is a podcast, so it's only the sense of hearing. I'm bringing back another installment of an international music round.
All right.
How foreign cultures and languages play in our predominantly U.S. English-centric landscape of pop music. So we've done a quiz before of English songs covered in foreign languages, and it got me thinking, like, what about the other way? Have there been any English songs that we know and love, and it turns out they originally were from another language?
Okay.
Famous pop songs we know and love, and turns out they were released or performed previously from another country in a different language. I'm going to be playing a clip of an original foreign language song, a non-English language song, and you have to identify what English language pop song came out of it.
Okay.
But I'm also excluding songs that are by the same artist first released in one language, then they recorded it in English. So for example,
artist.
No 99 Luftballon, 99 Red Balloons.
No, exactly.
Right? Okay,
exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
These are songs that existed previously as a foreign language in a different country and then became a famous English language pop song.
All right.
So here we go, number one. Dana!
It's Gloria by Laura Branigan.
Correct! Gloria! Yeah. Gloria! Turns
Gloria.
Out
huh.
It was the Italian song Gloria.
Wow.
Yeah. By Umberto Tozzi. Originally an Italian song.
I have to confess, when you said the theme of it, I was like, oh, I bet Gloria is going to be on this. I love that.
Oh, so you knew. Oh,
I listened to a whole podcast about it.
Okay.
Wow.
Here we go. Next one.
Pare già una festa. Che bella cosa è una giornata e sol. Ma no.
Colin.
Yeah, I mean, in the pop reimagination, is that It's Now or Never?
Yes, Now or Never!
Yeah, Elvis, among other people.
Elvis Presley, Now or Never, based on, I'm sure the classical nerds know this, is a Ol Sole Mio, a famous operatic song. But yeah, turned into a pop song recorded by the king himself. It's Now or Never.
I don't think I ever connected that. Yeah.
I did not either.
That actually just came up in a crossword puzzle that I did.
Really?
Yeah.
Here we go. The last one. Try not to sing along. Well, I guess you can't. It's in French. But
don't boss me.
Here we go.
je relève mon col comme d'habitude. Comme d'habitude, toute la journée, je vais jouer à faire semblant.
My way.
Originally French song.
I did not know that. That's incredible.
Claude Francois, title of the song is Comme d'habitude, which is as usual.
Huh. Responsible for more karaoke murders.
Yes. In the Philippines.
Than any other song.
Yes. My way. Sadly, killings.
I wish I were joking.
This song in karaoke sparks a lot of violence. People thinking the person who's singing is not good enough or not singing it well enough. And it makes them angry.
Tough crowd.
Because it is a classic.
Oh, and then we should say, not to be too obvious, as made famous by Frank Sinatra.
Yes. It sounds like such a Sinatra tune. Like it
oh
was
my
like,
gosh.
Made for him. Other songs not in this quiz that I just did include that we played before, Sukiyaki. And then also La Mer with Bobby Darin, Beyond the Sea, was also originally in French.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was listening to that song. I was like, what a cool song.
It is very French sounding thing. So part two, I have a part two quiz. So in the last couple of years related to this, I've become quite a big fan of a Korean boy group BTS. And they have been smashing records left and right. And I think the times have shifted as we just did this quiz. They're all older songs. And I think we lived in a time where maybe having a foreign language pop song was a little bit too new. But nowadays, it's like, you know, I think populations have been globalized. I think, you know, having a pop song that is in a different language doesn't seem that unusual to us. Here's my part two of the quiz. Since 1986, there has been 5 non-English songs that have hit Billboard number one. Not top 10, number one Billboard. Okay. You guys will work together. I will give you the years.
Okay.
And try to identify what these non-English songs hit number one on the Billboard charts. So here are the years.
Okay.
2020.
Okay.
2017.
Mm-hmm.
1996.
Interesting.
1987 and 1986.
I have a guess for 96.
So why don't you guys work together? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Macarena maybe?
Macarena?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. Macarena for 96.
I bet it's Macarena for 96.
2017 was Gangnam Style.
Ooh, yes.
Okay, I could see that. 87 non-English song hits number one.
I was thinking Feliz Navidad maybe is one of these, 86, 87.
But he sings, there's part of it Billboard. Is in English.
Oh, yeah. You're right. He does sing it in English.
So some of these songs have like English phrases predominantly in a foreign language.
Okay. 86 and 87.
80s, like Spanish language stuff was kind of getting big, you know, is it like Gloria Estefan, Miami Sound Machine, is it something like that? Is it like...
In these 5 songs, three different languages are represented. Oh, so we
is one of them?
We have Spanish, we have Korean, and we have German.
Is it Rock Me Amadeus? Could that be 86?
You guys have to lock down your answers.
Oh, I thought we were doing this as a team.
We're doing this as a team, but Karen's not on the team.
You guys are correct. For 1986, it was Falco, Rock Me Amadeus. The only English parts he says is Rock Me. 1996, you guys got right. It is indeed the Macarena.
Okay.
2017, you haven't gotten, and 2020, you haven't gotten.
Okay. Oh, so it's not Gangnam Style?
Not Gangnam Style. Gangnam Maybe Style. That was two.
That actually hit number two, but not number one.
Oh. Wow, okay. 2020, man, I feel like, come on.
But it is in Korean. The song is in Korean.
2020 is a Korean song. Uh-huh. 2017 is a Spanish song, and 1987 is a Spanish song. Made famous for a particular reason. Because
a movie came out in 1987.
Oh, La Bamba.
Yes.
Oh,
it is
La Bamba. Yes. You know, great.
Like Macarena, La Bamba, there's songs that already existed before, but to be released as a single, it got me famous.
I'm at a loss for 2017. Yeah.
Is it Despacito?
It is Despacito. 2017. And 2020, people might think it's Dynamite by BTS, but Dynamite is a full English song. It is Life Goes On by BTS, which is the song that came out. Good job! Okay. Colin, we're flying to you for our final destination. But not the horror movie, because that's really scary.
All right. So, you know, we joke around a lot on Good Job Rant, guys. But, you know, I think it's time to get serious here for a moment. In addition to the yucks and the laughs, you know, we have a mission, which is to help people play Pub Quiz. To that end, I was trying to work on a good mnemonic for us for a particular piece of trivia. Karen, I think you introduced me to this term a few years ago when we were playing Pub Quiz regularly of in geography Pub Quiz circles, the seven stands.
Yeah.
So these would be the seven countries whose name ends in S-T-A-N. There are seven of them. I'll give you that part. Karen told me at one point the mnemonic, just the seven stands, and it stuck in my head like the seven dwarves. So I want you guys to work as a team here. So one of the things that, you know, they love to do with us in Pub Quiz is they'll give us like, you know, there are seven of these. I'll give you 1 point for each correct answer kind of thing. We get those a lot in Pub Quiz. So I want you guys to work together. Mm-hmm. Karen maybe can name all seven of them. Karen,
I started writing it down to see if I can do it.
You spoiled a little bit here. I was going to put you guys on the clock. I was going to give you 1 minute to see how many you could come up with. That's okay. It's all right. We're all friends here. So I'm going to give you guys 1 minute here, and I want you to see collectively how many of these seven, how many of the seven countries whose name ends in S-T-A-N, Stan or Stan, how many of them you can name. So I will say ready and go.
Pakistan.
Yeah.
Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Turkmenistan. Uzbekistan.
Yeah.
Kyrgyzstan.
Yeah.
Kazakhstan.
Yes. One left. You've named six out of seven, guys, and you've only burned 16 seconds.
Tajikistan.
Yes, Karen got it. Good job, guys. Good job. 37 seconds left on the
clock.
Just
showing my work here to the camera.
I believe
you. Oh, no
one
can see it. Yeah.
All right. Well, great. So, yes. So, to review very quickly, that's Afghanistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Pakistan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. Now, there's some great trivia in and among all of these countries. They all border one another. They form a little cluster. So there's a good little chunk of stands, basically, there. Most of them are landlocked, strictly speaking. Now, depending on how you count the Caspian Sea as a lake
as a
proper sea or not, it's considered a lake by most authorities. Turkmenistan and Kazakhstan also landlocked. Here's some good trivia. Uzbekistan is not just landlocked. It is stanlocked. It is surrounded entirely by other stands.
Stanlocked.
It's stanlocked. Yes.
Uzbekistan. You said no jokes or laughter. You hit us with stanlocked.
So here's another one. So we'll bring it back to Liechtenstein earlier in the show. So along with Liechtenstein, Uzbekistan is one of only two doubly landlocked country. Yeah, meaning you'd have to cross two borders to get to an ocean, depending on how you count the Caspian.
Stan, what does Stan mean? Does Stan mean land?
It does. In Persian and Urdu, it means place of, land, place where one stands. Yeah, it's just basically the equivalent of, you know, land in so many of our land countries. Yeah. Okay, so Afghanistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Pakistan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan. How can we remember these seven stands? So that is AKKPTTU. If you go in alphabetical order. So here's the mnemonic I came up that I am very proud of. I spent some time on this. This is not just a good mnemonic. This is also good advice. You want to go fly a kite, always keep kites pointing their tops up.
That's a good one. Always keep kites pointing their tops up.
And that will at least get you to the seven letters. And hopefully you can, you know, hook your way in there from there. Yeah. I'm never going to ever forget these again because I'm going to remember that one.
Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan.
Yeah.
That's really good.
All right. Well, thank you. I had a lot of fun putting that one together. Yeah. And if you guys are curious, not that you asked, the reason I keep mentioning, depending on how you count the Caspian Sea. So the Caspian Sea, if you look on a map, it's enormous. It's huge. But it is technically a lake because it doesn't drain out to the ocean. But the reason that it's sort of contentious in political circles is because the rules of oil and mineral rights are different for lakes and proper seas. Okay.
So they want it counted as a sea.
So some countries, the countries with the long coastlines, want it counted as a sea because then they get proportionally more access. As opposed to if you have a tiny little coastline where you just divvy it up evenly with all the countries that border it. Yeah, a little sneaky stuff there. So you guys did pretty good there. Good job. And I really hope that somewhere someone listening to the show has pub quiz tonight. And they asked you about the seven stands.
On Zoom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where people and cheat and Google anyways.
Send me $1 if they do. Yeah.
I'm so bitter about that. I told you guys, oh. someone soundhounded music quiz or Shazammed it. And it was like, what's the point?
No shame. No shame.
Right. What a waste of everybody's time. Mm-hmm. Anyways. Mm-hmm. And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening. Hope you learned stuff about tiny countries, about Belgium, about foreign language songs, and about Snow White and the Seven Stands. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and on all podcast apps. And on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Why are we waving?
I don't know. This is the dumbest thing. I've tried to stop you this in Zoom meetings.
The hard part is waving, and on Zoom you have to press leave meeting.
I know, and then everyone like wave and like look.
and then they double check on Zoom, like, are you sure you want to leave the meeting? So it's just awkward.
So like, you're like, oh, your face. Like after pretend your screen froze.